Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about various professions from around the world. Each week I speak to a new guest with a very interesting job. I am Laura Leoncini and today my guest is Alisa Mock, hairstylist in Cape Town, South Africa. Alisa, welcome to the show. There are many ways to describe what you do, hairdresser, hairstylist. On your Instagram I read, beautiful chaos hair artistry, which I love. Now tell me, how do you define your job?
Well, there's so many aspects to it. You create art, you create people's image, and you make people feel good. So it is really more of an art and a craft than just a normal salon and day work and job, you know. So yeah, it's actually creating magic in a way.
It is. There's a lot of art, I must say, in there. It's like when you're a chef, there's the skills and there's the art together, right?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's like alchemy. You create a concoction of certain things that has an amazing outcome, you know, whether it's with color or cutting or cooking, you know, with ingredients. So it's actually very similar.
Very similar. What motivated you to become a hairdresser in the first place?
I've always enjoyed playing with hair, but it didn't actually come to me until I was about 19. It's actually a funny little story. Okay. I'm initially working in a preschool and I wanted to become a preschool teacher. And the little girl arrived one day and she decided I'm her best new friend and she wanted me to come and play Barbie with her. And I met her parents and they were actually in the business. He's a very well-known hair artist in South Africa. And yeah, we got talking and then he kind of offered me to just check it out for 3 weeks and help a little bit in the summer holidays. And I did that and I really enjoyed it. And then he was like, you know what, I think you should do this. And would you like to do an apprenticeship and I'll take you on? And then went from there. Like it found me actually. So
it found you. Yeah. So you had no idea that you would enjoy this in the future.
I mean, I did enjoy it, but I never really thought of doing it as a profession. So
as a profession. No, yeah. But okay. So you never did your teaching part.
I dropped out after a year. I kind of knew this was definitely more up my alley.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Awesome. You know, what's funny, I've been looking to speak to a hairstylist for so long, and there have always been issues, either unavailability or, you know, too far or couldn't speak English. And so I'm so happy because it's such an important job. It's such also approachable job. You can, an artistic job, and it's something that young kids should know of, you know, young men and young women when they want to, you know, like, what do I do now after school, right?
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of studying, right? Because I guess you need to do apprenticeship and so forth. Is there any study that you need to
do? I think it depends also on the country. I mean, I'm basing mine now in South African. And basically, you've got an option of either to go to college full time and then once a week you will work in the salon to get like practical experience. Or you can choose, which was what I did, you can work full-time in the salon and then once a week you go to college and then you do your practical and your technical basically there. So that's about 3 or 4 years. I think it also depends on which college you kind of end up going for. And then you have to qualify and do a trade test and then after that you're basically a qualified hairstylist. So, but I'm not exactly sure how it works overseas. I don't know if they have to do full-time or if they can also do the part-time thing. I personally would definitely recommend to work in a salon, get the proper experience, see really what it's like, and then just do the college part-time.
Ah, okay. So what age are you when you start?
I mean, I was 19, but I'm not sure. Here you generally have to finish high school and then you can get into it. But I've also heard of people that started when they were 16. I've heard of people that started when they were 40. I think if it's something that you want to do, I don't think you're actually too old to start it. It definitely does help to have years behind you, you know, just for your skill set. But if your heart wants to do it, you must go for it.
And so you know, because it's, of course, a very hands-on job. So the apprenticeship, is it something that you have, you know, you look for? I mean, in your case, it came to you.
I was very fortunate.
In other case, yeah
you, I think you should just do a little bit of homework, like look at different salons, see what they're like, look at their work. See if you can picture yourself being in there and then you just approach it and ask them, are you guys looking for somebody? This is what I want to do. Maybe can you send me in the right direction? Because I think it's really important to find a very good salon to start with. As I said, I was very, very lucky. I got into a very, very good salon, and that really made me the stylist I am today.
Wow.
So yeah, just find the right fit. Make sure that you get on with everybody, because you spend so much time together. It needs to really work on all levels.
Right, on the human side as well, right? Yes. Your colleagues and the,
it's all about human connection. You're working with people all day, you know, you're giving so much of yourself trying to make somebody feel and look good. So you need to have a team that you really can connect with and support each other.
Yeah. So do you remember when you first started, what were the first things you learned, what they taught you, you know?
You started right at the bottom. You do basically most of the cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that the clients have coffee and tea and magazines, and sweep the hair after each client, make sure with the sanitization that everything is clean and tidy. And then they kind of sort of start rolling into the entry level of washing the hair and doing the head massages. Then you start applying the root colors. Then you start assisting with the foiling. And then it goes from there. Eventually you will be doing your own foiling. You'll start cutting on doll heads. Then you rub your whole family doll in.
Okay.
Try to find some other victims to practice on. And then, you just level up. So the better you get, the more confident you become. And then eventually they will let you have your own clients. But that can take years. I only started cutting probably about 4 or 5 years into my training.
Wow, really? So then you had, how did you train? Like all your family members had to go through?
Friends. I mean, I started on my Barbies.
Okay.
Lots of friends on myself. We had some clients that were happy to be models. I mean, obviously being supervised, and if anything did go pear-shaped, my boss would come and fix it and rectify whatever needed to. But a lot of doll heads first, just to make sure you get used to it. Because, I mean, you're working with sharp objects as well. So it's a huge responsibility. So you really, I mean, I was petrified. My first haircut, I think I nearly passed out. I was so scared.
Really?
Shaking and sweating. And it was a basic little girl's cut. I look back now and I could laugh. But at that stage, it was so intimidating. But you have to face your fears with anything that you decide to do with your life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll actually be pleasantly surprised.
What comes out of it, yeah. What was your biggest fear then? Was it the hair cutting?
Yeah, I love color and I wanted to do color for a long time. And I mean, I think in America, you can actually choose to be just the colorist or just cutting. And then they kind of team tag with clients. And that's kind of the idea that I had for myself. And my boss was adamant, no, you need to learn how to cut. I need you to be able to do everything. It's just going to help you so much more in life. And he was right. So I'm glad that I could do both, because once you've got a vision for a client, it's actually kind of sad if you're just doing the one part. You want to kind of complete the whole look. So if I can visualize what I want to do with color and then how the cut's going to complement it, then you've kind of created a whole package for them. And that's a great skill to have.
So then you're coloring and cutting. I mean, I do know that it does become a really like a client hairstylist relationship where you know, okay, someone is really can see really my head and understands how I want it cut. And then I don't want to change ever again, hairstylist, because it is difficult. Also, because I guess you need to interpret what's the taste of your client, right?
Yeah.
Because you could think that, she looks good or he looks good that way, but then he or she doesn't. How do you cope with that? Is there a skill that you
build? I think it depends on the stylist. I think there's stylists and then there's stylists. Some people don't really care that much and they just want to do what they want to do. I mean, there's a bit of a reputation like that in the industry. People are like, I went there and they just did what they wanted and I hated it. Where for me, it's like, it's really important for me to understand of what you want, to understand your lifestyle, you know, how you deal with your hair, what you do work-wise. Like, I need to get to know you, like, completely. From gaining that information, I can then decide, okay, well, this is going to work or this isn't going to work. Like, for example, I'm not going to give somebody a style that requires a lot of styling and I know she doesn't even know how to hold a blow dryer. So it's just, it's no point. She's not going to be happy. I'm not going to be happy. And I'm not going to want to put my name on that either. So it's like tailor making, you know, like a style or color or whatever that will definitely like work for you. It's supposed to enhance what you have and not completely change it unless that's what you want. But then you have to have the commitment to, you know, bring it from your side, because I can't climb into your bag and blow dry your hair every morning, you know, so...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So coloring, is it something difficult to learn? I mean, you see colors that take a completely different nuance once they dry, right? Or once they're on your hair. How do you learn?
Color is definitely an artistry. I mean, it's a science, you know. You look at the canvas of whatever the client walks in with, and there's so many things that you have to think about, because what I often feel like is people forget that we are working with chemicals. It's not just like, oh, it's a pretty little color. No, it's chemicals that can permanently change the structure, the color, anything about your hair. So once again, there's a huge responsibility of like, what can the hair take? You know, what are you going to do to make sure that the hair's integrity stays intact? You can bleach somebody very quickly and it will fry the hair, or you can go in gentle and slow and it will take maybe half an hour extra, but you know that the hair's not going to be damaged. And then also depending on what needs to be done, like you can't just take one tube and put it on everyone and expect the same result. It's not going to happen. Like what goes onto the roots for gray, I wouldn't necessarily mix to put onto old bleached hair, because it would be far too harsh and the ammonia levels would be too high. So it's really an art of figuring out what you need to do with what, how the color theory works. Like if it's too red, what do you add? You need to add the opposite, which is green, because you need to cancel out the red. So same with yellow and purple, for example. So there's a lot of theory that you need to learn and understand before you can just go and create. And once you've got it, the world is your oyster. You can do anything you want. And I think that's where I get my joy from. It's just to really be able to create whatever the client wants or what I envision for them. It's magical.
It's coloring the one. I can see that. Yeah. Is it one of your, your biggest joy, the coloring?
Yeah, definitely.
Or pleasures, let's say.
Yeah.
Okay. When you were learning, what happened after, sweeping the floor and then doing the first haircut, doll heads, and then you started with coloring. How long is that time taken?
I did 3 years of college, then just stayed on another year just to get a little bit more experience. And then I think from the fourth or fifth year, we were allowed to go what it's called on the floor and actually do our own clients and kind of start earning commission and work your way up. So then you're basically a junior stylist. And then after every couple of years, you can kind of level up. So I stayed with my previous employer for about 8 years. And then I decided, no, I needed to branch out and do something else.
Okay, so 80. Yeah, it takes quite a long time to really master and craft your art.
I mean, I started in 2006. That's when I started my apprenticeship, and we're in 2024 and I'm still doing it. And I've had my own shop now for nearly 10 years. We just turned 9, so time flies, but it's so worth it.
It's worth it. Yeah, I was going to ask now between, what are the different outcomes of a hairstylist? Like, what are your options today? You can work at someone's
You can stay employed, which means all you have to worry about is your 9-to-5 and you get a salary. And most of the time it's commission-based, and then that's kind of what you deal with. Or you can take the plunge like I did and start your own thing, which comes also with a lot of benefits and some things that aren't so great, but it really depends on yourself. I know also a lot of people that decided they wanted to go into the yachts or the boats and the cruise ships and do that for a bit, or work in those holiday camps in the States or whatever. Like the thing is, hair grows all over the world, so you could travel with it. The only thing is, once you've established, you are kind of based, you have to base your surroundings on where you're going to make money. Otherwise, you have to start over and build up clientele again. But I'm saying if you're like fresh out of college and you want to go into the yachts or the boats or whatever you want to do for a couple of years, go do it.
There's also hair and makeup in the film industry, right?
Yeah, you could do that
as well. Is it different though? Yeah.
It's a lot more styling. I don't think you do as much color. I did look into it and then I decided not to.
Okay.
It's a long hours on set. It's what I'm... It's very basic. It's most of the time like you'll do like a mommy ponytail for some lady that's trying to sell Pampers. Like, it can be quite basic, sitting around for a long time in between shots. Like film, just it's hard work.
It's long.
Didn't really speak to me. I mean, I'm sure it can be more intricate. Like if you're working for Hunger Games, I'm sure the hair and makeup department is absolutely amazing.
Right.
But depends. I don't think that's your everyday. I think a lot of it is like adverts and catalog work and stuff like that. But I mean, some people absolutely love it. So that's what I'm saying. It really depends on what you enjoy and what you want to do. If you're happy to be on set and be involved and sit there for hours and do stuff, then that's what you need to do. But I enjoy the salon environment. I like having my own space, having clients come in, having this connection and like relationship of them coming back and you kind of build a friendship in a sense, you know. It's like I get to hang out with all the cool people every day, all day. I love it. So
you have recurring customers, of course, you know. Are they like on a weekly basis or?
It's mostly monthly. I mean, it depends. It really depends what you do. Some people want to have their hair touched up every 5 weeks. Other people come twice a year. They come from all over. It's very different.
How do they find you?
I think best advertisement is word of mouth. Like I have a lot of clients that get stopped and people ask them, oh, who does your hair? This is a nice haircut, or I really like your color. And I feel like that's the best advertising you can do. Obviously social media helps, but I feel like there's so much fakeness out there. Like I really try to be authentic, and if you're good, you're good, and people are going to find you. And it's, I think it's also important to attract the right kind of people that you want in your chair. And after a certain amount of time that you've done it, you will have the privilege of decide of who you want to serve. So yeah, it just happens naturally, I suppose.
Kind of organically, because I saw that you have quite an active Instagram, for example, and I wondered if that has brought you business or not.
It does definitely give you a little bit of an online presence, but as I said, like most of the time we've had people that get recommended or they find us on Google and they like the reviews. I think a lot of people also like to read reviews and be like, okay, this sounds good, I'll try that out.
It's true. It happens sometimes when I'm on business travel and I need to have a haircut. I Google map it, and then I look at reviews. That's true. That works. But otherwise, it's true that these kind of choices, I'd rather ask friends or people, you know, like have you got a good experience or not. Back to your choice of opening your own salon. Has it been difficult? What did you have to do? What were the steps?
To be honest, I think I was very lucky. We were quite fully booked from the day we opened, but it is because I've had so many years prior to that experience and build up clientele. So I think once you've got a following, it's a lot easier to decide to go on your own and open your door somewhere else. Otherwise, it can be quite tricky. Definitely costs a lot of money, but also once again, depending on where you want to do it, what you want to do. I bought an old salon and basically took it over with a business partner and then, kind of went from there and just grew and grew and grew. And that worked out well. But not too long ago, we had this whole lockdown and COVID scenario, and that was very tough. You know, we weren't able to work for about 3 months. We didn't get any support from our government. It was hectic. I have 5 or 6 employees at that stage, you know, that needed to get money to survive. It was rough. That was really tough. But we managed. Like somehow, magically, we were protected. I think it was provided for us. We made it through. And the second we were able to reopen, the phone didn't stop. I had to actually get another stylist to come help me because we were so busy.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
But it can happen, you know. Like in winter, people tend to not do their hair as much. Like there's a lot of salons that sit around and they do nothing, which can be tough. But once again, I think like if you are good and if you know what you're doing and you're doing it with love, like you will be supported, you will be guided, and there will be enough to go around, you know. I really do believe that. But that's with anything you decide to do in life. Like if it's your passion and if you do it with love, it's going to flourish.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's always the option, you know, entrepreneurship or being employed, and also depends on the person's personality.
Yeah.
And some will not venture into entrepreneurship, and but I do see that it seems that oftentimes when you enter this line of work, then you really want to have your own salon. You want to have your own clients, and you want to have your own space. So
it really depends on you. Like some people are very happy to just to be employed, and like that's all they want to deal with. But for me, it's just like I just had this vision, and I needed to do it for myself. I'm quite driven. I want to be a leader. It's just like little things. Like I want to decide what music gets played. I want to have a say in the decorations. I want to be able to talk to my clients about whatever I want to. So for me, it was important to do my own thing. And as I said, it worked out well, but it's not for everyone. But you'll know, you will know when it's time to do that step or not.
Yeah. And for you, it was the right time. You had gained enough experience and support and maybe a clientele base. Did you feel, let's say, overwhelmed by the idea, or was it you knew that you could make it?
Well, after I left my previous employer, I worked in another salon for about a year, and that was actually horrendous. It started off obviously great, but then it just got sour very quickly and lots of bumping heads. And immature behaviors, and that kind of pushed me to decide, you know what, I'm going to do my own thing. I can't do this. Like, there's no ways I'm going to work like this. Like, I'll rather change professions than carry on working here. And my ex-business partner and I were actually both employed there, and we decided to get together and start over. So I think we were meant to, and that bad experience pushed us. And it also made me the boss I am today. Like, I would never want to put anybody through of what I've been through. So, and that's my lesson learned. Yeah.
What are you most proud of today?
The success of my business, just of how well we've done, how amazing my staff is, how well we all get on, how much our clients love us. Like, I don't know, it feels so normal because I don't know any different, but just hearing it from other people and how proud them and impressed they are, it's just like, okay, wow, we have actually really accomplished something amazing here. So it feels good. And just seeing your clients leave happy, you know, like, I'm happy when other people are happy. So, I mean, if you are a people's person, this is definitely a job to consider to do. If you know, if that brings you joy.
Yeah. A very sociable job.
Yeah. But you have to be social.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be able to talk about anything. And you also need to be able to read and maybe not say anything if people are not in the mood to read. But it's a very, very social job. And another thing is, like, we don't really have lunch breaks, you know. I mean, legally you're supposed to have them. But in the hairdressing industry, there's no set rules of, like, okay, we're going to have lunch from 12 till 1. Like, you get breaks in between if you're not busy, but you're basically going throughout the whole day. It's it's physically quite exhausting, but you find moments. Yeah. Like, we'll actually probably sit around more than other people, but it's just not at dedicated times. But you're constantly surrounded by people and constantly talking.
Yeah, for sure. That's a part of the job, for sure. And, you know, do you have any lesson that you've learned in the past that the listeners can benefit from?
Good question. I think, just make sure you find the right fit if you do choose to do this. And learn and learn and learn. Like, don't think you're good enough and you know everything. Like, there's still things I don't know. Like, the second you think you know everything in this industry, you might as well pack up. There is always room for improvement. There's always room to learn. There is more than just one way of doing things. And as long as you can embrace that and be open to that, you'll be fine. Just stay humble.
Yeah, okay. And then also, there's a fashion that changes all the time, right? So you need to be also lined up with that. And
Yeah, you can, but... to be honest, like, when clients always ask me, like, oh my God, what's fashionable right now? I'm like, darling, I don't actually care, but this is what's happening. But to be honest, I think we should do what suits you. And if that happens to be the trend, that's great. But I'm not really a believer in blindly following some trend just because somebody's running around in Hollywood. Like, do what looks good on you. Like, I'm here to make you look better, not like a clown.
Yeah. For sure. And then one last piece of advice that you could give for people who want to enter your line of work.
Charge your worth. When you get to the point where you know what you're doing, charge what you're worth. Because so often you will undersell yourself, undercharge, feel guilty about it, and it's silly. Like, it's so much physical graft that you have to put in. The products that you use, if you use good quality products, are expensive. Like, it's a handmade skill. And that comes at a price, and you need to value yourself. Like, you know, like, I'm at my age now where I have to go to chiropractors, I have to go for massages, I have to do stretches, I have to put some magnesium on my shoulder. Like, the wear and tear of our industry is hectic. Wear good shoes, drink a lot of water, don't just run on coffee, and give yourself enough time to recharge as well, because you're giving so much to other people. So just make sure that your tank stays full. That's all I can say.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you. No, it's a precious advice to not get lost in the way. Thank you so much, Alisa. It's a time flies, you know. It's so passionate to listen to you, and I wish you all the best with your job and your salon, and I look forward to listening to more and more stories.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That was Alisa Mock, hairstylist. You will find more episodes on Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast, as well as any of your favorite players. I'm always looking for new guests, so please send me ideas on jobtalespodcast@gmail.com. See you next week for a new episode of Job Tales.